Today's program has been brought to you by Kane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit Kane5.com.
Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Good morning. This is Taste Matters with Mitchell Davis, but I am not Mitchell Davis. I am Karen Karp, the president and founder of Karp Resources, a food and agriculture consultancy based in New York City, and I'm thrilled to be Mitchell's guest host today on this episode of Taste Matters. Our title today is From Farm to Farm Bill, How Chefs, Restaurateurs, and Their Trade Associations Can Work Together for Clean, Healthy, and Delicious Menus on Every Table. And today we're going to talk about the great diversity of the restaurant sector. How do the changing demographics of the restaurant industry create or not consensus about policymaking and advocacy? From small chef-driven restaurants to corporate entities with hundreds of locations, how does taste matter all along the chain? I'm thrilled today to have two wonderful guests. Fred Sampson is the president and CEO of the New York State Restaurant Association, and he is a 30-plus year veteran of the New York State Restaurant Association. And my other guest today is George Weld, who is barely more than 30, although I just learned he's almost 40 years old as a person, and the chef, owner, restaurateur, and part-time farmer of two restaurants located right here in Brooklyn, in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Welcome, Fred and George. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for being on the show. I guess, you know, we were just talking for about a half hour before the show began on, you know, what's happening here in Brooklyn. Rick, I would love
it's okay.
For you to, your predecessor in New York was Fred, right?
That's right.
That's right. And I knew him. So that's why I have Fred on my brain.
50 years.
50 years. That's right. Anyway, so I apologize.
It's okay.
When you walked in the door here to Roberta's in Brooklyn, what did you think? What was your impression?
I really wasn't sure where I was, to be perfectly honest with you. And, you know, walking through the restaurant, which is very, very unique, and coming into this part of Brooklyn, which I don't get to, obviously, that often, I'm thinking, what am I walking into? But going back to Brooklyn and restaurants, it is the number one city area in the country for new restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
It's all happening here, to the point that you see a lot of the very successful city restaurants, New York City restaurants, are taking a look and obviously opening up mm-hmm. additional restaurants. And the area that they're going is Brooklyn.
And George, here you are. You have two restaurants in Brooklyn, and one is a baby.
That's right.
So tell us how you decided to move to Brooklyn and where you fit into the trajectory that that Rick just mentioned.
Well, I can't say there was any intention behind my opening restaurants here. I lived here, so it was sort of a natural decision to open mm-hmm. the restaurants here.
Mm-hmm.
We opened one 7 years ago, and when we started thinking about doing another one, I wanted to stay close by. And Williamsburg's been an amazing place to work, and it's full of incredible people doing great things, and mm-hmm. I couldn't think of any reason to go anywhere else.
Yeah, so both of you have different understandings of why Brooklyn is so hot.
It's true.
It's true. So tell me, Rick, from your constituency, you know that Brooklyn is hot because you see what's happening. You see the numbers of restaurants. In fact, I mentioned earlier, I looked up on the Department of Health's website this morning, and I found that there are 5,771 restaurants in Brooklyn out of the, quote, more than 20,000 in New York City. And we've had an increase in restaurants in New York City over the last 5 years or so. I think there were 17,000 restaurants here in 2005. So in the last in the last 8 years or so, there's been nearly a 20% increase or 10% increase, which is kind of crazy, given that there's a recession. So I just want to kind of throw out a couple of other statistics. The restaurant industry in the United States is about $632 billion industry. It employs 12.9 million people, and 48% of the U.S. food dollar is spent in restaurants. So that's an amazing number, right? And in New York City here, we have 20,000 restaurants. restaurants, of contributing to that $632 billion. What's happening here in New York, New York State and New York City, Rick, that is different than what your counterparts in other states are experiencing?
Well, again, it is, you know, it is New York City. And, you know, there's an old line that if you're out of New York City, you're out of town. And it, and that is so true. I don't know another area in the country that has over 23,000 restaurants. You and I talked a little bit earlier today. There's only five or six states in the country that have more restaurants in its whole state than what's in New York City. So it gives you some idea. Mm-hmm. You know, again, New York is we look at it as the restaurant capital of the world. Mm-hmm. It's the financial capital of the world. Mm-hmm. Communication, it's where people want to be. Mm-hmm. And again, what you have today, and it is becoming more and more apparent, that it's not only is it a need to eat out, but it's become such a big social part of people's lives today. And you have people who are certainly more educated when it comes to food. Mm-hmm. And you've heard that line, the educated consumer, and it's so true. Mm-hmm. They know what they want. They are willing to, they're adventurous. They're willing to try all types of food. And with that in mind, it is just an industry that just continues to grow.
So, George, here you are working, I don't want to say slaving away, because it's a different paradigm today than 20 years ago. And not that you don't work hard, of course you do, but you know, here you are in Brooklyn every day. How do you feel the sort of atmosphere that Rick just described? I mean, do you feel that New York City is the pressure of being in New York City? What is that like for you? Conversely, what are the benefits of being in this hotbed of the restaurant industry?
Yeah, I mean, I really only see upside to being here. I grew up in Virginia and South Carolina and North Carolina, and the restaurant industry there, like it is in a lot of other places in the country, I think is in a kind of a stale
funk.
Yeah, it's kind of a funk. The business model hadn't changed much. There's not a whole lot of creativity behind it. It's a lot of focus on it's a very narrowly focused industry, and it's led to a lot of we've seen a lot of homogenization and not a lot of creative energy. And I think one of the amazing things about working in New York and in Brooklyn in particular is that there's tons and tons of creative energy in the food scene here. Mm-hmm. Almost everybody I know, it's hard to say whether everyone I know works in food because I work in food, or if it just happens to be that it feels like sometimes everybody in Williamsburg works in food. And most of those people are people who come from different backgrounds. They bring incredible an incredible diversity of other interests to their jobs. It means that when you're in a room with other people who are doing this kind of work, you're in a room with people who've got incredible perspective, incredible energy. They've got a sense of what it takes to make something work that is invigorating to be around, because there's nowhere else like it.
I'm sort of forming the words of sort of a new intellectia about being in the restaurant business. We spoke earlier about, 25 years ago, and in fact, you know, when I was managing restaurants, which was, 25 years ago, it was absolutely true. If somebody asked, what are you doing? I'm a chef in a restaurant. The answer, the response is what?
Yeah, sorry to hear that.
Sorry to hear that.
That's the best you can do. And today is just the opposite. What do you do? I'm a chef. Like, wow, can I have your autograph? I mean, it's taken this long for this industry to really become recognized as a real industry, an industry that gives back. There is not another industry that I know of today that gives back to the community like restaurants do.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
I mean, thank God for the neighborhood restaurant. All the little league teams go to the restaurant to be sponsored. How many days a week do you give meals away, George, in your restaurant for good causes?
That's right.
That's what we do. Mm-hmm. We are so much part of that community that more and more people are realizing what a restaurant really means to their area.
So I'm glad you brought that up, because it's making me think that, you know, one of the most prevalent trends in restaurants and in food in the country overall is the sort of the local food movement. And, you know, people trying to sort of connect to their local farmers. Farmers markets have spurned this. Restaurants got on board. You know, the reason I know how many restaurants there were in 2005 is because we conducted the New York City wholesale farmers market feasibility study for the New York State Department of Agriculture, and we had to survey all, you know, a representative sample of all the restaurants, retailers, distributors in New York City, and we found then, which is 8 years ago, nearly $1 billion of unmet demand for local food. So, those statistics have not been updated, but I hear from people in the industry, food distributors, et cetera, that demand has increased 10 or 15 fold. So that means like $15 billion of demand for local food. So that's another way you could look at I'm looking at the sort of restaurateurs and the retailers and the distributors' commitment to purchasing local food as yet another kind of commitment to community. And I wonder, George, if you can speak to that a little bit, as you yourself have direct connection to a farm.
Right. I mean, I think the idea of local food is really it's not a euphemism, but it's a way of wrapping up a big trend towards good food, mm-hmm. in a recognizable package. And I think one of the things that we've seen people respond really well to, and that one of the reasons that I enjoy being in this business, is that restaurants and they're the intersection of a lot of really important forces in mm-hmm. our culture. Mm-hmm. The local food movement, which is really a small part of a kind of a environmental awareness, building rural communities, improving nutrition, improving flavor, mm-hmm. building community.
Thanks for bringing
themselves.
That in.
always happy to talk about flavor. Where was I going?
The way the connection to local food is kind of bringing in all these other elements: the rural development, mm-hmm. rural economy, community, health, nutrition. You were going on that trajectory.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt you.
No, it's fine. I just can't remember what your original question was. But I think my sense now is that the role that restaurants play in our culture is so crucial, because it mm-hmm. sits at this intersection, and because it not only, you know, as you mentioned, you know, more people work in restaurants than serve in the armed forces. More people work in restaurants than go to college in any uh-huh. given year. It's a huge group of people that are affected by this business.
Yeah.
And when you think about all that, you realize how important it is. You realize how important it is to build up the way that people think about it, the kinds of people who are talking about it, the kinds of attention that's given to it. So, yep. I mean, one of the things that we care really strongly about at our restaurants is bringing a sense of dignity to the work that we mm-hmm. do, mm-hmm. and understanding that when you come in to work as a dishwasher, when you come in to work as a prep cook or a server, you're doing work that's genuinely important. And I think, you know, we're all raised to hope to do work that makes a positive change in the world. And the restaurant business is one kind of job you can do where you can see the effects of that change right in front of you every single day.
Yeah.
So as Rick was saying, like, we interact with our customers every day. We interact with the community every day. We get to have a real hands-on direct connection to that kind of change.
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought up the word dignity, because it's a beautiful word. It's an important word. It's not a word that is enough spoken about when we're talking about the restaurant industry, and particularly when we, I think, are now becoming more and more aware of the labor issues, et cetera, and, you know, in the food system overall. But I'm also thinking, since we were just talking about local food, that there is something about when you're handling, when I've noticed chefs or dishwashers or porters or waiters, anybody handling, and I'm not talking about the waiters on Portland, but when you're handling local food, there is, you know, if you are kind of mindful about it and you're purposeful about it, everybody in the restaurant knows that there's a connection between that whatever, that, you know, a piece of asparagus or tomato or whatever that's on your plate, to somebody that actually grew that's actually somebody in your community, whether it, you know, might not be in your community on a rooftop farm here in Brooklyn, but it might be your community because it's in Greene County, you know, a couple hundred miles away. So this is making me think not only about, you know, taste and flavor and, you know, the hierarchy of that and the mindset, which I think is also a huge amount of behind the local food movement, but it's making me think Rick, about the, you know, the one of the topics that we wanted to cover here today is sort of, there are no kind of rules or policies around local food. Local food is just one of those things that people kind of grab onto. And yet you represent an association that works very, very, very strongly on creating policies to and legislation to benefit the health and sustainability of chefs and restaurateurs. So where is local food fitting in this conversation at the Restaurant Association?
It's huge. Uh-huh. And it's huge because the consumer today, especially coming in to New York or New York City or upstate, what you're seeing is they want that local flavor. And it's what George said earlier about, you know, it's all about local. It's about our customers who happen to be those people who are the farmers, mm-hmm, the mm-hmm, wineries. Mm-hmm. Our association has always taken the position as support those who support us.
Uh-huh.
And again, people are looking to buy local. It's uh-huh, it's the what do you want to eat, whether it's the in thing, it doesn't matter. That's what people want. We work very closely with New York State Department of Ag and Markets.
Uh-huh.
I wear a second hat. I'm also very active with the New York Wine and Grape Foundation. Uh-huh. I happen to be their treasurer. And one of the missions that we've been working on as a representative on that board is to have New York restaurants become more familiar and educated as it comes to New York wines.
Uh-huh.
And it has been a struggle. It's getting there. It's taking time. Uh-huh. But it comes down to, let's support those who support us.
Right.
And it is. I mean, local products, you just can't beat it.
Yep. Yep. I am just looking at the production booth and wondering if it's time for us to take our break. Yes, it is time for us to take a break. We're going to take a very short break and be back and follow up right on that comment. Thank you.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery, calling in from Spring Mountain above the Napa Valley. In our industrial world, most wines have become brands, but the wines I love are so much more. Fine wine is a civilizing substance that connects us to nature. It cannot be stamped out in a factory. If you're listening to this great show, you probably eat different. I urge you to drink different too. Go deeper. Cane5.com.
Thank you, and welcome back to Taste Matters, not with Mitchell Davis today. I am Karen Karp, and my guests today are Rick Sampson, the president and CEO of the New York State Restaurant Association, and George Weld, the president and CEO of Egg and Pig and Whistle restaurants here in Williamsburg. And, we got onto a really kind of interesting trajectory with this conversation, which is slightly different than how I thought it would go, but I want to continue it for a few minutes. We were just talking about the high demand for local food among restaurants, and local food is not just a cool, hip Brooklyn thing anymore. Rick, as you were saying, you're finding it around the state. And what are some of the issues that you're saying? You are collaborating with Ag and Markets, and
we're working, and one of the things that our members are seeing, again, purchasing local, because that is what the consumer wants.
Mm-hmm.
We give our consumers, our customers, what they want. And one of the problems we're running into, because it's successful, is that we're finding certain products, because they're trying to cultivate them quicker,
get them into the marketplace
quicker, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, the quality isn't quite as it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, along with that, a little bit of a price increase you start to see. It's not a big concern, but it's something that our people are looking at, right, and just wondering, can I continue to buy from that source? And the other problem that, and really speaking more upstate, believe it or not, even though there are farms there, is not only availability, but how do you get the product? It's delivering the product, mm-hmm, to the restaurant. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, that doesn't happen. You have to go get the product and bring,
yes,
it back.
We've been hearing for 10 years that distribution is the number one problem.
It is.
How do you do your sourcing besides the stuff you source from yourself, essentially?
Well, we go to the green market, mm-hmm, 3 or 4 times a week. We have relationships with farms upstate who do deliver. We've had a couple times we've had farms kind of come together, so one will put their food on another farm's truck, so the person who brings us, for a while actually, the people who were bringing us our dairy and our eggs were also bringing us our own vegetables, so, mm-hmm, our farmer didn't have to drive all the way down here.
Mm-hmm.
Distribution's a big problem. But I want to touch on something that you brought up about the trouble that restaurateurs have, you know, maintaining that consistent quality, or the consistency, really, I think, is... I think it's a... I was talking to a woman in North Carolina who runs a grass-fed beef distribution company down there, mm-hmm, and she said she's been having a really hard time because she takes these pieces of meat to chefs, and they all say, like, this doesn't look like it did last week, I don't want this, like, yeah, I need this to be this, yeah, mm-hmm, and it's like, and she was really frustrated, and I said, well, you should be. And I think one of the things that we need to do, and I think maybe it's something that you guys could help with, is there's got to be re-education on every end of this, mm-hmm, and one of the things I think is exciting about being a chef, and one of the things that's exciting about being in Brooklyn and working on all these people, is your job isn't to, you know, say, take for granted that every week you're going to get consistent product and you're going to just do the same thing to it this week that you did to it last week. Your job is to say, what can this land produce? Yep. What can my farmer give me? And what can I do with it that's going to be delicious and interesting enough so that these customers will come back and eat
it? Great point.
Right.
And how do I get the customers to understand that, yeah, I'm serving you fennel root this week, and here's why, and uh-huh, here's why you should be interested in that, and yeah, you're going to find out when you take a bite of it that it's delicious. And that's right, the kind of thing that I feel like is so exciting that's going on here, where I feel like there's a lot of change that's system-wide, mm-hmm, can happen. It just needs to get spread through the system, right, beyond where we are now.
And it is about, please, education. George, uh-huh, you're absolutely right. And as I said earlier, educating the industry, our industry, with the New York wines, and we know they're world-class wines. And it's that mindset that, you know, some restaurants are thinking what it was like 25, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Well, it has come so far.
Right.
And it is. It is an education process on having them becoming more familiar with those products. Mm-hmm. And exactly what George said, consistency. And it does vary.
Right.
Especially in fresh products.
Right. And you seem okay with that. Like, you get it.
Yeah.
Right?
But I guess the message has to be, uh-huh, to back to those chefs and owners, and then maybe eventually to the consumer, that it does vary. It's, yeah, you know, it's not coming out of a factory. You know, right, they're not all being stamped out the same. So,
right, and that's a huge paradigm shift, because that was, you know, 30 years ago, that was not the goal, right? 30 uh-huh, years ago, the goal was every single thing that comes into this restaurant needs to be exactly the same as it was last week, last month, last year. And by the way, it also needs to be the same price, and it can never go up, right? So, but the Restaurant Association, one of your key missions is education, right? So,
absolutely.
So this is great, because now we actually are getting right to the one of the original kind of directions I was hoping this conversation would take. So here you are, Rick, the head of this restaurant association. There are 20,000 restaurants in New York City. How many in the state?
There are 64,000.
64,000 restaurants in New York State. Go New York. Is that the most of any state?
No.
California beats us?
Yeah, you've got California.
We hate that.
They have their own problems still.
Okay. All right. So 64,000, that's still a huge number.
Yes, it is.
And how many restaurants are members of the Restaurant Association?
Just around 11,000.
Okay. So, all right. So a fifth or so.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. 11,000 is a lot of members
to
manage.
Should be a lot more.
No. Okay. So why is it not more, do we think?
I think a number of things.
Yeah.
Again, trying to get the word out. Our organization is 77 years old.
Mm-hmm. You know, congratulations.
Thank you. I feel 77 times. So.
You don't look it at all.
Right. But it's a struggle.
Uh-huh.
It's trying to get the message to restaurateurs what we do, what we have to offer. You know, it's just not... you know, we advocate for them, we educate. We've got some tremendous insurance programs that are really money-saving programs. And the education. We have an education foundation. Mm-hmm. We're constantly bringing those programs to our members, whether it is proper food handling, serve safe alcohol, being more aware of how to serve alcohol,
sure.
you know, to our consumers, to all kinds of education programs. We're doing a Manage First program for people in the industry that are looking to take some of their key employees and move them along more to a management.
So succession strategies.
Yes.
Yep, great.
Which is just a terrific program.
George, did you have any idea that this is what the Restaurant Association does?
Some, yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah. And I think this is the problem. It's
right.
It's the best kept secret here, but we do have a marketing company, and we've rebranded our organization
sure, yeah,
as far
the stuff
as the
looks
look.
Great.
And but it is. We're out there certainly fighting on behalf of the industry. I've been lobbying for this great industry for 38 years in Albany. And again, restaurants can't do it without help.
That's
and
right.
again, whether it's through the Restaurant Association, your local chamber, you got to have a source that you can go to.
Sure.
You know, it's...
So George, you mentioned earlier that being part of this great Brooklyn food community, and which is part of the greater New York City food community, just feels really good, and it feels to you like it's really working. But what are some of the things that you would like to see happen to sort of ensure or support the sustainability of your places and the growth of your business and some of your colleagues? Are there things that policy can help, that legislation can help with, that are even just conversations that should be starting to have that might not be being had in a very kind of formal or organized way?
Well, there's some kind of wonky things that I'm interested in seeing change, and there's some...
You are now the head of the Brooklyn food community, right?
Oh, no.
Just hereby anointed.
Tom Mylan or Taylor can have that job, or, I mean, Andrew Tarlow can have that job. There's a lot of people in line for that. I think... you know, I mean, one of the things that I'd like to see change, it's not just with the restaurant industry, is that's really wonky, is sort of how small businesses are regulated from a money-raising standpoint. Just you know, in our experience trying to raise money to open our second restaurant, we just discovered that the laws that apply to us were built for big corporations. They were built a long time ago, and it's a frustrating process to have to go through, and I think it stifles a lot of new business from growing.
Sort of the creative energy that started your first business, you weren't able to kind of really kind of take full advantage of that for your second business, in a way.
Yeah, it's,
or am I not hearing that right?
Well, I mean, what it basically boils down to is that the SEC makes it incredibly difficult to raise money for a small business because it's oriented towards... much larger scale businesses, and so that's been a frustrating thing. And we've worked a lot with Slow Money and organizations like that to try to find ways to creative new ways to raise money and to right. think about money. And I think the kind of energy that comes out of that movement is exciting. Yeah. But that's sort of the nerdiest end of the spectrum of things.
Great,
I'm
I love it.
About.
And on the but Rick is sitting here shaking his head because I'm thinking Frank, you're hearing this from many of your members.
I've been hearing this 38 years,
right.
And George is absolutely on the mark here. It's a struggle, and I think for a number of reasons that because of the failure rate of our industry, 75% of the restaurants open today will either go out of business or change hands in the next 5 years.
Oof.
We understand that. However, after saying that, you know, I look at some other areas, some other countries, and we just have to look to our neighbors to the north, Canada. Ontario has one of the best systems as it comes to tourism, which includes restaurants, obviously, hotels, parks and attractions. And they make money available to those startup and small entrepreneurs.
And
they get it.
Likewise in Canada, the agriculture policies are very, very favorable for development of new products and technology and capital available, etc. I am always amazed how quickly the time goes.
Well,
we have 1 minute left. And I guess while I have both of you here and the title of the show is Taste Matters, I'm thinking, you know, I'd like each of you just a brief comment on when you think about policy and you think about legislation, what could happen to kind of further and improve taste on the plates in restaurants across the state, across the city, across the country? What could happen from a policy perspective?
I guess what we've got to look at is less and less government intervention. I think that really, really slows down the process mm-hmm. in so many areas, as far as whether it's getting, from farm to table, mm-hmm. okay, with the regulations. And, it's unfortunate, but government has absolutely handicapped so many industries, including ours. We're probably the most regulated industry out there, and it's...
So loosen up a little bit to get that good local
Absolutely.
Stuff to the restaurateurs. George, what do you think? We're thinking about taste here. Like, what's going to get the best quality food on the plates in your restaurant? What kind of policy would help?
Yeah, I think. I'm not against. We've benefited from some of the regulations in the city, and I'm grateful for some of them and some of the support the city's given us. I'd like to see it. I know, like, Scott Stringer's been working a lot on understanding how the food chat works and understanding mm-hmm. the distribution systems that yep. might help support food come from out there to mm-hmm. in here. And I'd love to see that work continue. And
right. So it's a little bit more like how can government understand what's going on the ground a little bit and. Be as supportive as they possibly can. So I hope that this is the first of more conversations that the two of you will have.
Terrific.
I heard George saying maybe this is something you could help us with. So that was a call,
Absolutely.
A reach out. And I think we're out of time. And I just want to thank both of you for being our guests. We have Rick Sampson, President and CEO of the New York State Restaurant Association.
Thank
and
you, Karen.
George Weld, President and CEO of Egg and Pig and Whistle, and the newly anointed head of food in Brooklyn, at least for today's show. I want to thank you very much for coming to Brooklyn today and being my guest.
Terrific.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.